the kind of sense of loneliness and or just kind of space and grandeur of open space that the West still has for me, I think has traditionally for people and kind of how it resonates in American psyche. So this is that new book, Shannon, which you heard Jim talking about a little bit. It's a book-length poem, and it's a narrative poem. So it really is talking about it in question and answer. Today someone said, you know, it's kind of almost as if it was like a novel, and I was really interested in the story. And I said, yes, that is really what it is. I mean, it isn't like kind of like a story, but really another thing. It's really the story of George Shannon, who, as you heard a little bit, George Shannon is the youngest member of the Lewis and Clark expedition. He grew up not that far from here, western Pennsylvania, and parts of southern Ohio, just across the Ohio River in Belmont County, Ohio. And was very much like, you know, I mean, if he was alive now, he'd probably come to WVU for, you know, to go to school, which is something he did later in his life. He was just a frontiersman, in other words, 17-year-old guy who'd grown up in a cabin, who signed on to Lewis and Clark expedition and went off to cross the country. Anyway, George Shannon was an interesting guy, but he had the strange fortune to get lost on the Lewis and Clark expedition. It happened to him twice, but it happened to him most memorably for 16 days when the expedition was going up the Missouri River, crossing what is now Nebraska and South Dakota. So Shannon got lost. They sent him out to find buffalo, and he got lost. And he thought he would catch up relatively quickly. Found the lost horses he'd been sent out to find, went back to the Missouri River, but lo and behold, he couldn't find the expedition. Apparently he had fallen behind. So he set off up the Missouri River to catch up the Lewis and Clark expedition entirely alone in land that was, you know, nothing but vast open prairie with herds of buffalo and antelope and the Sioux Indians, and slowly began, among other things, to starve. He didn't have bullets with him to hunt. And for 16 days had nothing to eat really but berries, plums, what he could gather from nature. And by the end assumes he is going to die. So I'm going to read you two or three days out of that 16 days. The book just tells the 16 days of George Shannon and his wanderings. The book starts with two pages actually from William Clark's journals, describing kind of Shannon getting lost. So you'll just hear his name. This is August 26th, 1804, William Clark. After jerking the meat killed yesterday and preparing the elk skins for a tow rope, we set out, leaving Shannon and Drouillard to hunt for the horses lost last night. Directed them to follow us, keeping on the high lands. William Clark, Captain, Corps of Discovery. August 27th, 1804. This morning, the morning star much larger than common. Drouillard came up and informed he could neither find Shannon nor the horses. He had walked all night. We sent Shields and Jay Fields back to look for Shannon and the horses, with directions to keep on the hills to the Grand Calumet above the Niobrara River. William Clark, Captain, Corps of Discovery. Right, but they don't catch up with Shannon, and this is Shannon's tale, day one. It is a fine and open country in every aspect hereabouts. The very prairie, grasslands, thickets, or breaks along the several streams with elk and deer largely therein. Of those legendary buffalo first sighted and shot by Jay Fields, alas, none discovered by me as yet this day or last whilst tracking runaway horses. Those two did flee as if unwilling ever to be caught, but I came upon them at evening yesterday, drinking water in a sandy draw, well trampled by hoof marks dark as bruises, sure evidence of buffalo in great plenty. In the event, the fugitives appeared not unhappy at sight of me, found their hobble ropes trailing, which I did retie forcefully. Pleased as I am by this outcome, it was my hope to recover the lost horses, and so demonstrate my worth in such regards to the captains generally. I do not misdoubt them, only certain statements overheard among the company concerning my youth and stature as a hunter, which I deem false. Why should youth count against a man in this Missouri country? 18 years in the backwoods, I'm a better hunter than most back home, and this a newer land, nor Captain Lewis, nor Clark, hoary graybeards. Yet President Jefferson saw fit to appoint them command of this expedition. Well, it is done, and the horses recovered, at any rate, by myself alone. President Jefferson is a man much admired by Captain Lewis, who frequently recounts his love of the same hills Captain Lewis knew as a boy in Virginia, rambling long days outdoors, the joy of which I share in kind, says they much resemble the country along the Ohio River, yet these lands along the Missouri are that much starker, bolder, gouged, and abandoned to grass and sky. As God much imbues this world with his self, I guess now the captains are in these parts, and us, and President Jefferson, like to which the moonlight, enumerating each stalk with blue shadows. These wild, wind-torn lands flung to the horizon will soon enough be states of the Union. Why else fashion a core of discovery? If such they become, I would hope to name one New Ohio. Coming on evening, I make shift to camp shy of the river one final night, and will welcome sight of it and my companions on the morrow. These horses will not stray. I have tied them to a cottonwood tree, not trusting the hobbles. What I took to be stones in the gloaming were skulls of buffalo. The expedition had just come into the prairie where they knew the buffalo lived, but none of them, they were all Easterners. They hadn't seen any buffalo, so Shannon was really eager and excited to see a buffalo, as you hear. This is day six. This morning, climbed a large round hillock set back some half mile or so from the river bluffs, wishing to rise above and scout the country for sign of the expedition ahead and possibly to recognize once and for all the location of these great rocky mountains long promised. Some days ago, at the village of the Maha, we made shift, along with Captain Lewis, to climb another such hill, atop which the burial mound of their great chieftain, Blackbird, interred upright upon his horse. There we did tie our flag as tribute and sign of friendship to that nation. They are much reduced by the smallpox, the Maha, and set upon in said weakness by their fellows. Worse luck that Captain Lewis did intend to inoculate these Indians against it, only to find the vaccine spoiled in transit. President Jefferson is much concerned with the pox and would vanquish it. Nonetheless, the captains did honor to their chieftains and big men with such articles as breechcloths, tobacco, flags, etc. Being somewhat short in goods, certain certificates from President Jefferson, recognizing their friendship with the United States, made little impression upon them. One chief of the Ottos, by name Big Horse, turned back his certificate as useless, angering the captains. This Big Horse, arriving buck naked to the parley to demonstrate his poverty, no wonder he might wish some more useful article, yet he did set us howling. It were the smallpox killed Blackbird along with many others. No more than 300 of their people remain. From Blackbird's mound we could see nothing but plains across vast distances and grass and sky and the river shining silver. Same silver, same river, my distraction. High craggy bluffs, betimes, I left my copy that I have marked to read from on the airplane today, and so I borrowed this from Jim, but I have places, I'm just giving you, I'm skipping a few lines, but I don't have it marked as well as I would. High craggy bluffs, betimes I tour along the very edge of them, eager for their vista, despite the river twists and turns, so where, oh where, have the captains got to? Must be driving the keelboat steady under sail to make such time, plus which the pirogues. Alone with the black horse now, I cover good distance daily. They cannot keep ahead of me, it would seem. Sun, something fierce, garrulous birds and buzz of the grasshoppers and buffalo come to drink, twining and filing well-worn trails to the water's edge, the river wending among uncounted sandbars with what might call ease or seeming accident, though I've been taken to wonder these days whether it might have some absolute purpose hidden there. Why would God create a thing that wanders aimlessly? He would seem to prefer straight thinking, if I may presume, so as to simplify the task. Why would he create such an animal as these buffalo to feed men, which purpose they no doubt admirably fulfill for the Indians at any rate? So many buffalo aggregated together, small herds and large, a single vantage comprising many thousands, and here some lumbering up the bank like oxen, others on a hill away south lowing and mooning, some ponderous bulls in rut charging and roaring, the ground shaking as with thunder when one group rushes suddenly past my vantage, only to merge into the larger band on the other side like river waters backing and swirling, sheaves of fur and hair caught up in nettles, the dust of hooves and those rolling and lying in it, and their heaps of turds steaming everywhere, and those dried out the Indians use for kindling, and some calves sporting or frisking like lambs, many bones in the long grass, horns and bleached skulls, skittish packs of prairie wolves keeping watch, antelope, deer, and elk in company. It is a sight of no small magnificence. These grasses, their equal abundance in the wind. Betimes I find myself floating among them, flowing with the clouds across these hills and herds and within the grasses, from the hawk's height to the dust valley at the ant's eye, there great Missouri, a stream I might piss out if not so damned parched. Must make shift to the river to fill my skins before nightfall. These grasses are like a skin to the earth, or a quilt, or blanket. No, it could only be God that had knitted such a thing, and he don't need it to keep off the chill, and such is not considered man's work. Being a man, I might imagine God would need a woman for quilting, mending, and plenty besides. I do believe I have tread unintended into the fields of blasphemy. Who then has put such thoughts into my head if not God himself, surely not the devil? I do not believe that rascal entwined in this billowing tapestry with nothing to grasp upon but clouds and wind, or hide behind and rear up from, not even the yucca gloriosa, a difficult plant but not evil-minded. Is this also blasphemous? I believe Parson McCready would say so, but he is often off the beam and a poor judge of workmen and cheap besides. If my thoughts arise direct from this landscape, how other than God ordained could they be? For it is all of a piece. Who made the grass, made also wind, dust, thorn, the grasshoppers, shadow and light, a dove I wish would set upon that stump to wring its neck and eat it raw. My hunger grows powerful. This much for certain. If God did create the buffalo, he made one great, strange, daft animal. Day 13. Shannon is really starving to death at this point. And this is a kind of dream or incantation about the buffalo that befalls him. Let there be light upon the prairie dust, light and the germ of it within the dewdrop infused, parched light of the moon reflected constellations, pearl on yucca, immortal diamond. Is the day come? Are the stars come down? Has the river fallen, John? Silver of frost and birds' eggs, rising up, the first bell stroke of light, my cloak of light to keep you. Take this sword of light, this ruin. Is it a dream of loneliness that calls me? Is the day come, Brother John? Are the stars come down to keep me, Thomas? Animals in the darkness all around me, huffing and lowing of the buffalo, sound of their lungs steaming into the light. I am not alone in the darkness. Buffalo, 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 buffalo. Still dark, but not alone. The great herds pulsing all around me in the darkness, snort and exhalation, stomp and low. Herds of buffalo, beards of saliva, tongue and forelock, rustle in the grass of the buffalo gathering, heavy stamp of hooves and bodies of the buffalo, trumpet and bellow of the buffalo herds at dawn, roar and grunt in the horn light glinting, hump rumble, herd wallow, gruff in the darkness, smell of the buffalo strong on the river breeze, black eyes wide as the western ocean, great herds of the buffalo all around me, buffalo, 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 buffalo. Herds and eyes all around me in the darkness. Buffalo in the dawn light, breathing, whispering, I am the buffalo god. I am the buffalo god. Behold my kingdom. This is the last day. Day 16. We'll read day 16, then I'll read the next day, Clark's journal. Day 15, rather. I see now that I was set in my vanity and blind to it as a stone cast into water. Surely the captains have passed on to those rocky mountains, and I suppose I shall never see them or the western ocean we set out to find. No doubt they give me up as captured by Indians, eaten by wolves, drowned in the Missouri, etc. The Corps of Discovery cannot wait for one man lost upon the prairie, nor would President Jefferson approve it. Nor is it their place to rest and let the water come to them. They are pledged to make their way to it. But being no longer any part of that company and a free man alone, I may so rest and choose to rest and gird for what may be. I grow weak to frailty, what purpose to continue? This black horse would feed me several days in my extremity, and I might come to it yet, though I would feel downcast to kill what has caused such trouble to rescue, and that a mere postponement, lest some canoe happen upon me soon, and what likelihood of that? Vanity is what has gotten me into this, horses and bullets and vanity. Better to loose the black horse if it comes to it. He might end snake-bit or put to toil by the Sioux, yet I can imagine him living wild upon this prairie after a fashion that might please President Jefferson, to have American horses run free here. Why else send men forth to survey and prospect its entry to the Union, and why charter the captains to scientific inquiry lest to enlarge both realms concurrently? Such a hunter as myself, with game abounding, to wither and starve seems unlucky, unkind. I could wish for many things, more balls in my shot pouch or more jerky taken from Druyard or greater skill as a fisherman or salmon jumping into my hat or I don't know what. When my brother John drowned in the Ohio River, the current snatched his body under and he was gone, one second to the next. That was a rocky place we knew better than to fish at, but we had once before caught a great sturgeon there, larger than a man, and we loved the chance of such again being children. Thomas and I searched 2 days alone for the body, and some thought us drowned as well before we found him, snagged up in willow branches, and carried him home on horseback, heavy to bear. Mother took to bed with sadness, and Parson McCready, a steady nurse to her, how else did we endure him in our cabin? Still, I would abide by the river. I find it less troublesome than the emptiness of these plains pressing so upon me. Empty is one way to put it. Another that they are over full, but not in keeping with a man. Too large in both emptiness and fullness is what I mean to say. I have a conception of my soul being taken up in their austerity and solitude to be devoured by the stars, and I mind it no longer. My bones will weather as well in prairie soil as any and rest better unconsecrated. I cannot believe the house of God more fit to the task than this eternity of grass, nor man nor beast would decline this tomb of clouds and wind for a plain wood coffin on some muddy hillside in Ohio. If it is to dust, we return best to proceed there directly and more practical. What weeds may rise through my rib cage shall feed some hungry elk or buffalo, as the ribs themselves supply a morsel to the wolves. Who owns this land more truly than the bones of the creatures that layer and constitute it, whatever the law of man may say? The last of the Maha will fade from the earth, vanquished utterly by the Pawnee, and after the Pawnee, the Sioux may perish, and eventually the Kentuckians and Ohioans, etc. I doubt not but my countrymen will populate in number these fulsome plains, but what untold count of years and men, of decades and centuries, what numberless generations will it require, life by life and skeleton by skeleton, to claim this land from the buffalo? Who finds this body? Be it known, my name is George Shannon, and I bequeath my remains to seed this land with American bones. September 11, 1804. William Clark, Captain of Corps of Discovery. A cloudy morning, set out very early, the river wide and shallow, crowded with sandbars. Here, the man who left us with the horses 16 days ago, George Shannon, he started 26 August and has been ahead ever since, joined us, nearly starved to death. He had been 12 days without anything to eat but grapes and one rabbit, which he killed by shooting a piece of hard stick in place of a ball. This man, supposing the boat to be ahead, pushed on as long as he could. When he became weak and feeble, determined to lay by and wait for a trading boat, which is expected, keeping one horse for the last recourse. Thus a man had liked to have starved to death in a land of plenty for the want of bullets or something to kill his meat. We camped on the lee shore above the mouth of a run. I saw several foxes and killed an elk and two deer and squirrels. The men with me killed an elk, two deer, and a pelican. William Clark, Captain, Corps of Discovery. Thank you all very much. Thank you.